Blog Talk Radio.
Best with quest for perfection. The beauty in a miracle, bringing a perfect world extreme. Time to take differently and change direction. It's up to me to block it out. It's up to me to lock down my own universe.
Well, hello and welcome again to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Thanks for tuning in tonight and hopefully every Wednesday or sometime afterwards as you listen to the archives. It's going to be a busy month, that's for sure, so I hope you can manage to squeeze us into your busy schedule. And while you're there, please mark Voices of the Sacred Feminine as a favorite on Blog Talk, and maybe consider, if you haven't already, just click the follow button right there on my show page, and that way you'll be aware each week of who I have on my show as a guest. You'll just get automatic notices to your email box. Well, tonight I have another dynamic duo for you to listen to. At the top of the hour is Suzanne Vaughn, animal communicator, who's earned the title Communication Queen. I know this is a topic all of us animal lovers always find intriguing. How can we connect with our beloved pets? Then, at the bottom of the hour, starting just about 7, an hour from now, we have Dr. Linda Savage, author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, talking to us about the most powerful time in a woman's life, cronehood. In our society, the older woman poses an interesting dilemma for some. She's not the nubile young maiden who we can often bend to our way or our whim. She's not the giving mother that gives and gives and maybe gives way too much sometimes. She's the crone now, the woman of wisdom, experience, who's lived life, and you can't pull the wool over her eyes. Yep, we're going to give the crone and all women their due tonight. But first, I want to thank Jenna Green for use of her music. That little snippet you heard opening the show was from her song Acceptance. Even though acceptance is really the last thing I'm going to encourage you to do. Well, what do I mean? Well, I won't be having an official What's the Buzz segment tonight because we have time limitations with our two wonderful guests. So I'll just offer my opinion on what we see right now out there going on in the world. I say don't accept what the media is saying, that it's inevitable the Republicans are going to sweep the elections in a few short weeks. Why? Because it's still up to you and me to cast our vote, and if we go out and vote, if we don't stay home, and that's what I hope you'll do, we can show the right that no matter how much foreign money they take, that democracy is still in the hands of the people. We can say no, we don't accept the grand old party being for corporations that continue to outsource jobs, who take money from countries that want our jobs in their countries, not here at home, while our unemployment rises. We can say no to the Republicans that they aren't going to get away with continuing to make the gap between the haves and the have-nots larger and larger. We can say no. We do not accept your plans to do away with civil rights, the Department of Education, the EPA, the minimum wage. We can say no to privatizing Social Security. I mean, come on. Do they really think they're going to make day traders out of every American so they can invest their own money in the Wall Street casinos? Hell no. They know people aren't going to maneuver the waters of Wall Street, and they're going to lose that social safety net of Social Security. Paltry as it is, so paltry that 70% of women retire in poverty. We still have time to keep that wolf away from the door. That wolf, those Republicans who are against science, who are homophobic, who want to keep the rich getting richer on the backs of the poor. You know, people, this is a culture war. Folks don't want to say the words because it's ugly. But some of us out there are busy. They're confused. They don't know the issues. They're being further confused by lies and commercials that distort issues. You know, when was the last time you heard anybody talk about quality of life? Instead, what do we hear? No, we're just going to have to accept that we have to work longer, work harder, and for less as the fat get fatter. So please, 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 if you're only getting your news from Fox, please tune in to some different channels. Try The Ed Show, Dylan Radigan, Keith Oberman, Rachel Maddow. Hear the other side of the coin before you decide. We can't afford to have the Veterans Administration privatized. We can't afford to cut Medicaid. We can't continue to rob from the poor to give the rich when big oil and other companies like those are getting corporate welfare, outsourcing jobs, and robbing us and our children of their future. So please, even if you have to hold your nose and vote, because if you're like me and wanted more meaningful change and it hasn't come quick enough, if you're like me making less than $200,000 a year, the GOP has nothing for you but wedge issues of hate and divisiveness. Don't let them dupe us anymore into voting against our economic interests. Okay, that's my mini rant. That's my What's the Buzz segment for tonight. I appreciate you telling me that you've missed it and you want it back and you want me to keep talking about the issues that affect you and me in serious ways, because we don't live in some mansion behind a wall. A lot of us ride the bus to work. We live from paycheck to paycheck. We can't even sometimes afford our health care. And if you're listening live and want to call in and talk to either of my fabulous guests tonight or myself, the call-in number is 718-766-4662. I know most of you listen from the archives, but if you want to call in, when I see you on the switchboard, I'll get to you when we have a lapse in the talk and invite you to give your comment or question, and I'll identify you by your area code. Okay? And finally, stay tuned in till the end of the show, because I'll be making some important announcements, including news of Gaia Fest in Santa Barbara in November. I'll be giving a talk there on Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. News of some of my important upcoming guests, like this Friday, we have Dr. Vandana Shiva calling in from India on the show, which is going to be followed by Tim Workman. He and I will continue our discussion on politics. We'll also have, for your listening pleasure, women who have defied the Vatican and become ordained priests. We'll have Clarissa Pinkola Estes, author of Women Who Run with the Wolves, on the show. And my latest booking, Frank Schaefer, who will talk about saving Christianity from Christians and fundamentalism, because he's a survivor of that groupthink. And my Turkey tour for women and men in November 2011. It's called On the Trail of the Great Goddess of Anatolia, which means Land of the Nourishing Mothers. We're taking only 20 people, so if you're interested, it's best to stake your claim to a seat on the tour as soon as you can. And that is for women and men. So, all right, that's the housekeeping out of the way. So let me turn my attention to our first guest tonight, Suzanne Vaughn. Let me tell you a little bit about her first. She's been a student and a teacher of metaphysical phenomena for more than 30 years. As a psychic counselor, she's helped hundreds of people identify issues facing their beloved pets, predict their future, contact loved ones that have passed on, and sort out life's toughest circumstances. Her first career was as a radio newscaster, talk show host, and producer. In fact, we were just talking about her maybe starting her own show. How wonderful that would be. There she honed her speaking, writing, and broadcasting communication skills. After the events of 9/11, Suzanne knew she could not continue to be inundated with grim news day in and day out and keep herself spiritually sound. Opening herself to her soul-level guide, she visited her psychic friend, Patty, who told her she was well-suited to psychic counseling. Since she'd been offering sessions after work and on weekends for years, it wasn't long before she began to pursue the practice full-time. A pet psychic who was a guest on her talk show helped Suzanne understand the traumatic past of her beloved Chow Chow, Rusty. The experience inspired the self-titled communication queen to learn to bridge the gap between humans and their animal friends and begin to practice the skill of telepathy in earnest, adding one more kind of communication to her list of communication skills. She has a book out, too, a book of incredible stories from her many pet psychic sessions and adventures. It's called Dispatches from the Ark, Tales from a Pet Psychic's Notebook, and you can get it on Amazon or on her website, telepathictalk.com. So, Susan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, and thank you for the welcome as well.
Well, I've been looking forward to having you on the show for such a long time. Our topic tonight is telepathic communication with animals, obviously. how did you, you know, I mean, how did, does one get into that? I mean, it's not something I wouldn't think we, did you just sort of stumble into it, or had you been intrigued
by
it?
Well, I have to say that it must be a calling type of a thing. Some things are just a calling, and it calls to you when you're at a crossroad. I would say that's how I would characterize it. It's a skill anyone can actually do, but people who have a calling do it to a greater extent than others, you know. But telepathic communication is certainly a great tool for anyone's life. But for me, it was a calling, and because on my nights and weekends and so forth, doing it on the side while I was in broadcasting, I was doing people readings, not pets. And so when I began to do it really in earnest and full time, people started calling me about their animals. And I was, you know, with eyes toward the heavens saying, are you sure? Because I didn't really know that much about animals. But in some ways, when you don't have a whole bunch of intellectual knowledge about a certain thing, you can focus on the communication aspect itself. And that's where my expertise lay. But the animals who came to me when I began to do psychic counseling full-time really were surprising to me as well. So it was a calling, you know.
Well, how does it work? I mean, and when I say work, I mean, you know, when you're in a session with someone, do you, you know, sort of, you know, send psychic thoughts to the animal, or can you explain the process?
Absolutely. It's a two-way process, and the animal sends you pictures, generally speaking, and you send the animal pictures. But the animal and you also, as you develop, you send other things too, like a feeling or a knowing or a, but if, you know, if you're like me and you're a visual person, we start with pictures, and then, you know, animals are different. I mean, some send you a feeling, some send you a smell, some send you a picture, a sound. So, all the senses are engaged when you're discussing things with an animal.
So, hypothetically, say I'm a client and I call you and I say, and this is true, you know, my cat Zena, she licks and licks and licks herself, and there's no visible reason. You know, there seems to, you know, she doesn't have fleas, she doesn't have skin irritations, but she licks herself practically bald in spots. Can you tell me if she is disturbed or agitated in some way? Then do you then reach out to Zena, or how does Zena get in the, you know, between my calling you and you doing your psychic skills?
Well, you're an important part of that, and sometimes we act as a team to find out what's happening. But generally speaking, in a case like that, and we can do it right now with Zena, I would request that the client send me a photograph via email to start. And
okay,
they should have actually done that. But I don't know if you can do that at this, you know, at, you know, while we're still talking or not. But since we don't have that, I would ask you to begin with a description of Zena, and then I would psychically put her in front of me, and we would be connecting more or less through you. You see, it's
okay.
Very helpful to have the primary human companion involved, although you can also go direct, but generally this is your inquiry, so that's sort of the triangulation of the communication, if you will.
I see. So it's almost as if I'm sort of the conduit. I wish I
had
thought
to ask you.
Well,
in some ways you are, but also you act as I may get pictures and feelings, and then you'll be very helpful in the interpretation.
I see. Well, unfortunately, I wish I had talked to you before the show about this. I don't actually have a way to send you a picture of her, unfortunately.
Well, that's okay. We can work by description.
Okay.
That kind of opens the door, so why don't you start there?
Oh, all right. Well, she's a smallish black cat. Her hair is very velvety. Her underside, she does have sort of a little white dot, and she has one white whisker that has developed rather recently. And she just, you know, she seems to constantly just want to lick her lower belly, lick it, her haunches, her lower belly, and I'm not sure what else to tell you.
Okay, I'm checking a few things. Just a moment. One characteristic of telepathy is you also have a relationship with your higher sources. And so, I mean, if you work it like I do. So but you have to come up with the questions. So I'm currently asking questions and testing different things. So I have to come up with the questions in the situation. So I'm asking things like, is this an internal, what does it feel like? Let me start there. What does it feel like when I'm in your body? Tell me your kitty's name again, I'm sorry.
Zena,
okay. What's it like when I'm in your body, Zena? And so the first feeling that I get is to decide or see if it's internal because I'm being taken there. So I did feel that it was, but let me just double check. Yes, it's multifaceted here. The first thing is there's something internal. It seems to me at a joint, and it seems to be like an arthritic part of the joint. There's other things, too, that are surface-related to skin surface. And let me just double-check. Let me check quickly a remedy. I get a very strong indication for a remedy I like to use, which is just pure salmon oil. It's made by a company called Grizzly Salmon Oil, like the grizzly bear, and you can find it on the Internet.
Okay. Wow, well, thank you.
That seems to be good, good in this situation. But Zena also seems to be, you know, different facets of this and relatively deep. You know, part of it seems internal.
You mean that she has some sort of allergy or something like that when you say internal?
This one thing felt like the hip joint.
Hip joint.
You know, like an arthritic condition. And then there was also an allergy aspect to it. And I would normally go to testing the first five ingredients of whatever it is you're feeding her would be the next move.
Okay.
So is that information available? Or?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I feed her dry food called Inova.
Let me just test that as a brand, just a moment for her. That seems fine.
And the other thing, about the only other thing she eats is her wet food is Fancy Feast, usually tuna or turkey.
The tuna tests much stronger.
Meaning that's not good for her?
The tuna seems very good.
Oh, very good.
The turkey sort of tests weak when I check it. I check it a few ways. I put I have the image of Zena, and I put the food through the body, and the body either brightens, stays the same, or dulls. And then the second thing I do is double check by muscle testing it. So I have a couple of checks there as I'm tuned into the animal. So that food looks all right. And also the salmon oil looks very good.
Well, all right. Well, let me try that. So even the turkey might be okay. It's just the tuna is better for her.
Well, I still have to say the turkey, for some reason, with that brand, tests weak for her.
Okay. So maybe don't give her that anymore.
Yeah, well, I bail out on that. I'm finding a lot of interesting things with food these days. You know, all kinds of dogs are developing problems with chicken. And, of course, that's the first thing most vets give them if they've got anything going on at all. And it seems to be related, although, you know, it's not my field of expertise, but seems to be related to hormone or antibiotic given to chickens.
Okay. Well, you know, just like we people are being affected by all of that.
Food sources, yeah.
Well, in the hip joint thing, you know, I've noticed that she likes to spend a lot of time laying on the cable box, which is warm. I'm wondering if that may be, you know, it's like a heating pad on that hip joint.
Very helpful to her, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was really interesting. You know, and personally it was helpful. And, you know, as the host, it was interesting to hear you actually walk through that process.
Sure.
And I mean, see, you know, in hearing how you bring the food and, you know, see the food with the animal and how the body glows, and that should be awesome. Well,
yeah. It's harder to do with your own animals, in my opinion. I mean, I hate to say that because most schools of thought are practice on your own animals first, but I have to say in some ways it's more difficult with your own animals because either it becomes very automatic or I'm not sure exactly what, but it just seems sometimes harder to be clear with your own.
Well, let me ask you this. How does, you know, if you are trying to do it with your animal and you've never done this sort of thing before, me personally, I mean, I would find it really hard to trust myself. You know, I would be constantly questioning. You know, how do you...
That is absolutely the first hurdle.
Yeah. What do you do for that?
You just keep practicing because that's... You know, it's like most things, you know, anybody can play the piano, but you have to keep practicing to hone your skill on it. And you practice trusting. And, you know, even if you think, well, I might be imagining the animal said that, well, okay, then just set that thought aside and say, I did hear the animal say that, you know, you did.
Okay.
We are so good at denying miracles, I swear. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
It's amazing. We
can see it in front of us, but we'll talk ourselves out of what we're seeing, you know?
Yeah.
So
and, I mean, most people know a time in their life when they ignored their intuition, and it was at their peril.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So, you know.
Well, when you're talking to your pet, I mean, does it matter if you try to, you know, like sort of speak to them mind to mind, or if we actually say words to them verbally?
Well, I have to say, when I speak to people who are just beginning, I tell them go ahead and use your words because then your mind pictures will follow those words. Much easier for your mind to follow the words than for you to start trying to visualize everything. It takes some practice to translate, one, the feeling the animal sends you into words, and then, your own stuff going into pictures that the animal will understand. So it's good to just start with your words, you know?
Okay.
And you can go from there. Animals want three things more than anything else. They want more information. You know, where am I going to go? Are you going away? How long are you going to be gone? Are you coming back? Who am I going to stay with? Am I going to their house? Am I staying at my house? You know, stuff like that. They really want to be informed, especially if you're going to move or do anything major, you know.
Okay.
And then they want some respect as a species. They're here to help us spiritually, and oftentimes we don't recognize their spiritual gifts, you know. I mean, animal lovers, absolutely, we get it. But they are here to be, you know, to enjoy a new level of respect for their spiritual purpose. And then, let's see, I'm trying to think of the third thing that they want the most, but it'll have to come to me later, I think.
Well, let me go back to they want respect for their spiritual service. For someone that might sound a little bit odd to, you know, can you give an example of, say, you know, you might love your beloved cat, but, you know, how are they providing a spiritual service?
Well, a cat in particular can do all kinds of different things or teach many, many different lessons. They can teach the lesson of full relaxation. They can teach the lesson of play and provide examples for us. They can be, you know, very affectionate yet independent, which is something we all kind of strive to be, I would think, somewhat independent, but also with a soft side too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they can really show you a lot of things.
So just by their nature, in a sense,
yeah.
how they walk
I mean,
in the world.
how they walk in the world. In many cases, they're very altruistic. You know, the sacrifices a dog will make, the dog will usually give its life for a beloved, you know, human companion.
Well,
so,
you know, does this sound strange, Suzanne? I mean, sometimes I've noticed that my other cat, Isis, since my husband's had knee replacement surgery, she will actually go lay on that knee, and I can't help but get the strong feeling that she's trying to help heal him. Is that a crazy thought?
Not at all. She absolutely is. I mean, they will even, if you don't have a talk with them, they will take on the illness and die because they're really not attached to the body. They just say, well, I can just get another one, you know, if I come right back, or, you know, it's just not, they're day-to-day, moment-to-moment, and they're great healers. You'll find oftentimes people who are like massage therapists or something like that, very hard to keep the cats out of there when they're healing people. I mean,
wow.
They're just natural healers, and oftentimes they want to take a direct role, and you say, well, you sure you want to do that? You know, I can put you in another home or do it. They say, absolutely, this is my role here, and don't try to take my purpose away. Hey. You know?
Right.
You can talk to them a little bit about not taking it full on, but...
Do you believe that, for instance, if, say, one of your pets dies, that the next pet that comes into your life, do you think there's a possibility that that second pet is a reincarnation of the first? Does that ever happen?
I've seen it happen, yes. But I tell people who, there's a lot of people who kind of desperately cling to, they want that exact animal back. And for the most part, that's not going to happen because the soul would not evolve if they came back to the exact same person as the exact same animal under the same circumstances, etc. So, yes, it does happen, but the way I see it is, the new animal, if it indeed it is related karmically or soul at a soul level to the one that's passed, is sort of a spark off of the same oversoul. So they're very deeply related. But it's likely to be a different kind of animal, a different color, a different sex, a different species, and trying out other things, you know.
I see. Interesting. Well, when you get consultations, is there something that people ask more often than not, you know, that you see as more of a pattern?
People often come to me with behavioral issues. So for cats, it's the box. That's generally how they, generally cats communicate that there's something seriously amiss by going outside the box, especially cats that are good at going inside the box. And so that would be the number one, I think, for cats. And then for dogs, I'm getting a lot of health issues, I have to say, for all species.
Okay.
But generally behavioral, dogs that are rescued oftentimes really need a helping hand in terms of, and this is interesting, just being heard. If they've been through really tough circumstances, I can hear and say out loud what they've been through, and it's like going to counseling. You feel a big sigh of relief, and their lives improve with their people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So very inspiring work.
Well, let me ask you about the sending of pictures. Say, for instance, you're going to go on vacation, and you want to send your dog or cat the message that you're going to go someplace for, say, a week. How do you, this might sound, you know, like a dumb question, but how do you actually send that concept in pictures?
Not at all dumb. It took, you know, it takes people some hints on this one, but animals understand time by the fact that it will get dark 7 times.
Ah.
So you tell them it'll get dark 7 times and then I'll walk in the door and be back with you, which you also want to make sure to wrap up the visualization with.
Ah.
Not all the separation without a coming back, and especially for a rescued animal that's had, you know, been rehomed a few times.
Because they have abandonment issues.
Absolutely.
So you would actually visualize the sun rising and setting 7 times to them?
Or just that it gets dark that many times.
Okay.
If the sunrise, sunset thing works for you, that's fine.
Okay, I get it. And now when they send a picture back to you. I guess I'm wondering, and you know, I love animals, so I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, but how smart are they sending back these pictures? I mean, is it easy for you to get it? I mean, obviously you're experienced at this, but can they speak to you pretty clearly, I guess, is what I'm asking.
You know, there are all levels of intelligence and ability to communicate. Animals that have been really, you know, told they were dumb or, you know, or they are a little, you know, having a little interbreeding problem, there's that. But there's all levels of ability to communicate. And so, and, you know, there's all personalities as well. I mean, there's definitely the strong, silent type dog.
Okay. Okay.
You know? There's the British gentleman dog. I mean, they really have their personalities, you know.
So really,
I once met a very sophisticated, you know, adult-feeling dog who was very upset because he lived with a young woman who always spoke to him as a, you know, as with baby talk.
Ah.
And so it was very funny to hear him. But anyway, there are all levels of ability to communicate, but I really, you know, if you can use many different kinds, you know, feeling, sound, smell, you know, all that stuff, then you're bound to find the channel. And for me, hook up with your higher sources and ask for help because they'll be right there. And also for me, I ask for any animal friends and or totems or, you know, anybody, any animals focused on the highest good of all concern to come on down and help me out.
Okay.
So you can do that too.
Well, we have someone who has called in. Let me check and see if she has a question for you, Suzanne, just a minute. And caller, if by any chance I disconnect you, please call back. Hi, you're with the 562 area code. Did you have a question for Suzanne?
Yeah, I've been told it's a panther. In around me all the time. What does that Black Panther represent?
Oh. What does a Black Panther represent? Well, you know, I hope this doesn't seem like a cop-out, but for me, for one thing, I'd have to look it up, and it will be different in different traditions. You know, certain Native Americans will say it's this, and Hindus will say it's that. So the most important thing in interpreting what a Black Panther means is what it means to you. Does it mean the Black Panther political party? Does it mean, you know, what does it mean to you? That's, it's your higher sources trying to get a message to you, generally speaking. So, for example, if I'm speaking to my higher sources and they're sending me some kind of symbology like that, I'm going to, like, let's say they send me yellow roses, okay? So, Karen, if you get a picture of yellow roses, what does that mean for you?
For me, yellow roses?
Yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, I'm thinking prom.
Prom,
you know.
Okay, yeah. Or friendship. Some people say friendship. Well, for me, it means Texas. The yellow rose of Texas. So when my higher sources send me an image of yellow roses, I'm thinking, okay, something's up in Texas or whatever. So the bottom line is what the Black Panther means for you.
So it doesn't have a universal meaning?
It does not have universal across cultures, no. It's different.
Because she saw this on the other side for me. She consistently saw this on the other side for me.
Uh-huh. Can you repeat that, Karen?
You know, I didn't hear him either. Caller, if you could repeat that one more time. You were kind of breaking up.
I said she consistently saw him on the other side for me, around me, energetically.
Mm-hmm. You know, I suspect it would be some kind of teacher or guide.
Right, right. Yeah, I know that.
But the actual large cat symbol is your own personal interpretation. Large black cat. I mean, in our culture, I mean, obviously you're an American guy. In our culture, black is a dark or the dark side. You know, this kind of cat is big and powerful. It's fast, you know. Death is also very stealthy like that. You may think of it as a symbol of death. In some cultures, they do. but it you know, it has many aspects to it.
Now, you
but
see, what I'm thinking
of cancer, especially if it's on the other side, is certainly one of a teacher or guide.
Well, it's sort of like dreams, Suzanne. I was just saying, it's like with dreams. There's not universal meaning in dream symbols either. This is sort of the same thing as what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The appropriate thing to do is to communicate with the Black Panther. You would sit in a meditative state, imagine it in front of you, and ask what message it has for you. Request help and remembering and in interpreting whatever comes to you. But that is the way to find out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, caller, thank you for calling in. So, Suzanne, there's an animal communicator's code of ethics, I believe
yes,
you were saying.
Is.
Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. These code of ethics are just a list of things that all of the folks that are connected to animal communication pioneer Penelope Smith and others subscribe to. We believe that each being has honor and goals and purposes, and we are supporting the advancement of every being. We promote the idea of the spiritual connectedness of all beings and compassionate action and the raising of consciousness toward healing our planet as well. We feel like the communication and healing of the relationship between humans and animals is a very good place to start, or one of the things that we need to do. And we honor and promote the innate capacity of non-human and human animals to communicate with each other. We think it's very possible. One thing about going into this work that happened for me is that once I started exploring going into the work, I found that the people who were doing it were so very high caliber. I mean, most of us are advanced degreed people who were once in the corporate world, you know?
Right.
It's amazing to
right.
find the people doing it and to see the miraculous changes that occur. It's
did you
very
want to give some
inspiring
examples?
Work.
Did you want to tell some of your stories?
Do we still have time?
Yeah, we probably have about 20 minutes.
Okay.
I figured
sure.
we would talk till about 7 o'clock.
Okay. Let's see. I have been working on the health issue of a cat this week. This cat's name is Moonstone. And Moonstone was feeling very badly when Moonstone's person called me. And I did my work over the phone with Moonstone, as I do probably 90% of my cases, because they're all over the world, actually. So when I checked in with Moonstone, certainly I felt very lethargic, to say the least, and really feverish also. And so the person was going to take Moonstone back to the vet for some fluids and wanted to see how I felt like that would go. So I spoke to Moonstone about it, and the cat was very cooperative about going and had been very cooperative previously in going to the vet. And I explained that the fluids would make him feel much, much better. So he told me originally that he could heal himself if everybody would just please leave him alone and let him sleep and stay in the closet. And it was at that point that I said, but, you know, you don't want to go to dehydration, and I really feel like this injection of fluids would be good. So we also tested with the human companion several different homeopathic remedies that I put through the body. Only one of them or two of them in very small doses was indicated by my research. So the kitty went to the vet and got the fluids, and the vet unfortunately put some kind of antidepressant in there, which was not good, and because there was some kind of appetite stimulator in there. So anyway, other than that, the fluids, so the cat was quite uncomfortable all night long because of the added drug. And but I knew, I felt like it was going to turn the corner. And the human companion was ready to go back to the emergency the next night, but I was really very, as I tuned into the cat was telling me, please, just let me get some sleep and get through processing this drug that was in the fluids, you know?
Right.
So the owner was able to, or the human companion was able to take the gamble to do what I asked or what the kitty was wanting to have happen. And the cat is much better today, much better, up and about and walking around, and, you know, great things have happened.
Well, that's a wonderful story.
Very cool.
So that's pretty typical, the sort of way you're...
That's a typical medical story.
Yeah. Do you, I'm just curious, you know, I'm a fan of that show Medium on television where she's always awakened in the middle of the night with some dream. Do animals come to you in your dreams like that?
The poor girl, my gosh, she never gets any sleep.
And the husband, too, what a sport he is, huh?
You know, I'm telling you. The thing is, if it really functioned that way, you'd be a total wreck.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me tell you, I do sometimes have some animal dreams, but mostly I process people stuff at night, I have to say. Because I do so much animal stuff during the day, they don't often communicate with me like that. So,
okay.
And maybe it's because I'm in direct communication with them in the day. And also I have to say, I have some boundaries about it. You know, I do not want to be a medium who walks around on the street hearing what everybody else has going on. No.
Right.
If you don't mind, I'll open and shut the door.
Well, and it's good that you can. You know, it's good that you can open and shut the door.
Yeah. Well, everybody can. I think it's just a matter of being serious about it.
Well, you know, going back to our
Claire.
Caller before, I don't know if he's still listening, and I apologize, caller. There was so much background noise, it was really hard to hear some of even what he said.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, he was thinking that the Black Panther would be a universal symbol, but, I queried, because you said no. I mean, often people think dream symbols are universal when they're not really either. These symbols are really personal to us, correct?
Yes. Well, they are. I mean, sometimes you have to make a deal also. Like, for example, it doesn't hurt to look in a book to say, what's the dream symbol for this thing? Well, then you decide whether or not you're going to adopt it, and you make that deal with your higher sources who are speaking to you in this kind of symbolic language, you know?
Right.
So
you
can get clear on what some symbol means to you if you don't have one for that thing.
Well, and I guess maybe it gets hard when something, you know, authentic or true doesn't jump out at you and you're just not really sure, you know? You know, when it's just not coming to you, I think that's when it gets frustrating.
Let me tell you, it is a whole different language. It is a whole different type of communication. And, you know, it's a foreign language.
Yeah, I guess you could think about it like that.
Yeah.
Well, now you said something, too, about there's a negotiation we do with animals. What did you mean by that?
Well, if we want an animal to exhibit a certain behavior or not do a thing, sometimes the animal will go into negotiation like, okay, I won't do that or I will do that if you'll do this. And they often do that. You know, they often negotiate.
Okay, all right. You're really making me curious now when you were saying that our pets, there are three things they want: the respect for their spiritual gifts, they want more information. It's making me think now when I go back home tonight and I see my two girls, Isis and Xena, and they look at me, I'm going to look back at them a little bit differently tonight. And I guess I wonder, do they, and maybe it varies from animal to animal and how developed they are, but would you say it's sort of safe to assume that I mean, are they always trying to communicate with us? I mean, that must be really frustrating, a struggle, or do they not think about us that much? I don't know. Does that sound silly?
I'll tell you, they are delighted when you're trying to do it.
Okay.
So it, no matter how bad you are, they are going to love it. And especially that you're attempting, that first of all, they definitely know your intentions. And if you're attempting to hear them, that's very, very encouraging for them, you know?
Okay. So, I mean,
sometimes
I could.
That's really all they need.
So I could go home tonight and say to Zena, Zena, send me a picture of what you want to tell me. And then just not turn off that left brain skeptical side and just see what pops in.
Yeah, and here's a couple of hints on whether or not it's the real thing, okay? The first thing is that it will try to, the message, the picture, whatever, will try to get into your head so fast, whew, before you can deny it. Then the denial will start. So look at just before the denial what came in.
Okay. Okay.
And say, I trust my ability to receive the message. And then let's say you really don't get anything, blah, blah. Then ask your higher sources to help you to bring it through in a dream when you're much more open. And not only that, but to help you remember it when you wake up.
Okay.
So then have your little pad by the bed because sometimes it's easier to bring in that state.
Okay, all right. Now, you said that there is actually science and research behind this telepathy. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I can. Some of the early experiments have happened in the UK, interestingly enough, and they have been in the first. One of the early ones was a study in which dogs knew when their owners were coming home, no matter when the owner was coming home. They varied all the times of day and circumstance of the human companion to the dogs, and the dogs still exhibited certain kinds of behavior when the person first, set the intention to go home, began driving, or became close to the home. So that was some of the early experimentation. And then other experimentation has included empathy between rats. If one rat is being hurt, then all of the several other rats in a certain colony will exhibit some of the same kinds of like nerve damage or different damage that can only be described as empathetic because they're not receiving the same type of treatment, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. So they're taking on their pain.
Yes. And then, of course, there's the 100th monkey syndrome in which a certain number of a species learns a certain behavior that is maybe moves the species forward, becomes a stronger species, let's say. For
mm-hmm.
example, these particular monkeys who were learned to wash their foodstuffs because there was something that would have been very detrimental to them had they not washed the food source. And then once they get to a certain critical number, all of the monkeys around the whole world began to wash the thing.
Wow. And they sort of got it through osmosis? I mean, how does it travel?
Telepathy is my take on it.
Okay. Well, and you made me think about elephants. I mean, maybe this is different, but they seem to be so smart. And when one dies, they all seem to grieve. I mean, it just seems
they
to be a higher level of awareness.
Grief is palpable. I mean, they stand in a circle around the one who dies and trumpet for a certain period of time. And then they touch it very gently with all of their trunks.
Hmm. So sad.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it really is. And when you think, how some people so callously just sort of shrug off, oh, they're just animals. that's painful. That's painful that people can be so unenlightened.
Well, we have a history of only respecting the scientific model. And this model came into vogue just as patriarchy is taking hold and matriarchy is being, you know, was being sort of stomped into the ground. And we're coming back to some of our feminine talents that we can now claim, and that even some of our greatest thinkers like Einstein said was a more important skill than the pragmatic, the scientific, that he's basically, his position was one without the other is no good. So
right.
We need to integrate the intuitive and the telepathic and our spiritual sides, and I believe we are doing that now.
Well, thank goodness. Well, you know, and I'm wondering, too, you know, when you're doing your work and you're working with animals versus working with people, is it similar? Is it very, very similar? Are there any parallels?
Well, that was one of the things that was very surprising to me early on when I began to get a few calls from people that had animal issues. And my higher sources were saying, go for it. When I entered into the process, I noticed it was exactly the same. It wasn't any difference at all. It was all telepathic communication. It was all, you know, involving the higher sources, not different at all.
Wow. Well, now, you said that, and maybe you've already said them, but let's sort of punctuate it now. I believe there's 7 simple steps to actually talking to our animals. Do you mind sort of just running down those and sort of a list for us?
Yeah, not at all. You want to start by getting yourself clear. So you need to at least take 3 deep breaths, and it would be better if you could have like a 5-10 minute meditation. So you need a tranquil mind in order to be able to hear.
Okay.
And you need a place that's, you know, tranquil and pleasing. So once you got this place and you're in a state, in a meditative state, you want to ask your teachers and guides to help you out, because they can't really help you out unless you ask.
Okay.
The third thing you need to do is to just say your animal's name telepathically, or just visualize your animal sitting right there in front of you.
Okay.
You can start by sending a picture of your animal's physical body if you want. Direct that to him or her along with the name, you know, just to make sure you're connected. And then ask if there's anything that your animal would like you to do for him or her. That's a good place to start.
Let me back up to the last one. I'm actually writing these. When you said send the picture to the animal, you're sending a picture of them to them? Is that what you meant?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So you're basically saying, I'm focused on you right now.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
And then you want to really just, it's nice if you start by asking the animal what they'd like to say, because it's so often that we've been telling them what to do. It's very nice to just be there, just being with the animal. Really a great place to start. Just being there, being receptive, being open. Not asking them to do anything, not at all, just being there. But, there are a few more instructions.
Okay.
So ask if you'd like, ask if your pet would like you to do something for them.
Okay.
Imagine they're sending an answer back through a picture, thought, sound, smell, or feeling. Remember that your imagination is very powerful, so accept whatever you receive that's very quick.
Okay, so it's the quick one is probably it, like you said.
Yeah, then watch yourself, because you're going to be like, oh, that can't be it. But
okay.
Animals have these little fun, nonsensical ways of telling you things. You might have to sit on the picture for a while and think about it.
Okay.
Then just acknowledge the answer. You know, thank you for the answer. I know you're sending it to me. Whatever you receive in your imagination, and thank your guides and your animal for their willingness to communicate with you in this way.
Okay.
And then ask other questions. Remember to trust your imagination for what you're getting.
Okay. Well, you know, you're making me think now. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you get into little routines with your pets, And, you know, I have this little routine in the evening. Sometimes I'll come, you know, sit in this sort of big, you know, fat, comfy chair, and sometimes I'll be on the computer, and, you know, Zena will come sit on this specific arm, and it's almost like she, you know, and I sort of get the feeling maybe she just wants to be close, or like if I have to work on the computer, she would, you know, almost find a shelf where she could just sort of curl up on and just be there. I guess I'm wondering, is it just as simple as they want to be with you, or I don't know, is there
more? Absolutely. I mean, one thing animals are really good at is just being. And that's certainly one of the gifts they bring to us, you know, to show us just to be, not
right.
to do, just to be.
Just
May
to
I
be.
Also mention that the 7 simple steps are found on my website at telepathictalk.com. And
okay.
the code of ethics is also found on my website at telepathictalk.com. And something else we talked about. Oh, there are several stories and articles of interest related to things that are common behaviors that I work with animals on. And some of
okay.
them are really interesting, little inspiring stories.
Now, can somebody learn to do this via online classes?
There's a great group of classes out there online. Animal Spirit Network is one of them. There's a couple more. Animal Spirit Cafe, I think there's one called. But there's some great. Look Animal Communication classes, Animal Communication classes online would be some good search terms.
Okay. And just to shift gears a little bit here, because I want people to know more about you, you're also the owner of GoddessGifts.net. Do you want to tell us about that part of what you do?
Sure. It's GoddessGifts.net. It's singular. And that is a website that it's got lots of museum and historical replica figures that are ancient goddess figures that are cross-cultural goddess figures. So there's Hindu, there's Egyptian, there's Mesopotamian, there's lots of African goddesses. I just expanded the section on African goddesses. And it's statuary, jewelry, clothing, plaques, flags, banners, all related to ancient goddess figures. So we can see what our magnificent female history is, a female deity.
Well, Suzanne, since you've been studying that as well, I'm curious if you have anything you'd like to share about, I don't know, the female shaman, you know, as it relates to telepathy or animal husbandry, or, you know, we see so many of the ancient goddesses with the lions,
yeah.
you know. Do you have
oh, yeah.
any thoughts about any of that? You know, maybe what it was really about that we don't really know for sure.
Well, oftentimes when I look at the past lives of an animal, or someone asks me to look at the long and deep link they've had with a particular animal companion, I see them in very ancient settings together, like Egyptian high society or Egyptian priestess or royalty with certain animals that are part of the court type of a situation. And some of this ancient goddess worship was, I believe, about these relationships in which women were honored and held up as excellent oracles because of their abilities in telepathic communication and in prediction. So they were, you know, like the oracles at Delphi. I mean, they are very well known. So
right.
women have a long history of that, and the animal companions, I ask lots of animal companions to help me in lots of things that I do. And many of them are very evolved creatures, you know.
Well, how can they help you?
They can help you on all kinds of levels if you just ask them, you know. Like, for example, the animals that I care for generally have the responsibility of helping me to get the communication clearly, interpret the communication clearly. I mean, anything they can do to help, I'm, you know, happy to accept it. And I believe they do help me.
Okay.
I have a guinea pig right now, Wiggy. Wiggy is very helpful. I tell Wiggs, you know, we're about to go into session. Thank you for your help.
Okay. And she's there for you and provides guidance or
yes, she
support
she helps
answers.
Me get it clearly. And, mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Suzanne, it's been fun.
Okay.
So let's just repeat your websites again. I'm sure folks are going to want to know more about this. And I'm sure on your website, does it say what your fees are for the service and that sort of thing?
It does, and if you don't mind me saying, it's $45 for half an hour and $75 for an hour. 45
okay.
minutes is $60. You get it. You can get as many animals in there as you can.
Well, that's very reasonable.
You know, yeah, it's very reasonable.
Okay.
So,
and it's
that's
it,
how that is.
I'm sorry, go right ahead.
No, I was done.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say your website, so I'll say it for you.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
That's
I'm
okay.
Sorry. It's telepathictalk.com, telepathictalk.com, telepathictalk.com. That's my pet and people psychic counselor website, and my name again is Susan Vaughn, Suzan, and then V like Victor, Aughn. My other goddess-related website for goddess gifts is goddessgift.net. That's GoddessGift.net. So I hope you'll visit me.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much. And I am going to get back in touch with you about that grizzly salmon oil for Xena too. So I certainly appreciate you, you know, giving me that tip. Hopefully that will, you know, help the poor deer with, you know, all the itchies or whatever it is she must have.
Yeah, I hope so. It's not too expensive, about $19.99 or something. So it'd be really worth it.
Okay, all right. And I guess they tell you how to apply it or give it to them orally or whatever it is.
You know, you just squirt it on the food.
Oh, you squirt it on the food.
Squirt bottle, one squirt for a cat her size, and there you have it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Suzanne. And you're
all right.
Please know you're welcome to come back on the show anytime. And
thanks so much.
Thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for, you know, making that connection, you know, as the ancient priestesses used to do. You know, we really have to, I think, relearn our skills today as contemporary women, and you know, you're really, you know, helping us do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate your work as well.
Okay, good night.
Good night now.
Well, listeners, you have just been listening to Suzanne Vaughn, the Communication Queen, and I see our second guest is on the switchboard, and I'm going to say hello to her in a minute, literally a minute. But first, I want to switch gears here, and I am going to let you listen to just a brief snippet of a song called Breath of Passion by Zingaya, and about 60 seconds from now, I will come back on the line with our second guest, Linda Savage, and we're going to be talking about the powerful crone, how you know, how the older woman poses such an interesting dilemma for some. You know, as we said earlier at the top of the hour, you know, she's not the nubile young maiden who often, you know, can get bent to someone's whim. She's not the giving mother that gives and gives and gives. She's the crone now, the woman of wisdom, experience, who's lived life. She's the woman who you can't pull the wool over her eyes. So with Linda Savage, we're going to give the crone her due in just a few minutes. But first, real quickly for about 60 seconds here, enjoy, please, Breath of Passion by Zingaya. Thank you. back. If you're just tuning in to the second part of the show, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking, the feminine consciousness, whether we call her the Great She, whether we think of her as deity, archetype, or ideal, and we often talk about how these new values and benchmarks just have the potential to save our world if only we'll listen. So I am going to open up the line now to our second guest, Dr. Linda Savage. Hi, Linda. You there?
Hi, Karen. I'm here.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show again. And we haven't had you on for a while.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I think the subject we're going to cover tonight is so very important, because it's in our culture, unfortunately, the older woman seems to become invisible, or, they don't really know what to do with the older woman in Hollywood, although I think that's getting better these days with, a lot of the older, powerful women we see on screen.
Thank heaven for Meryl Streep.
I was thinking even Helen Mirren.
Helen.
Yeah. I mean, really, really great role models, for women to see, the potential of their older years. But Linda, just in case some of our listeners are new to the show, let me tell them a little bit about you, and then we'll continue the conversation because it's so important for women, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is Linda. Linda is a PhD. She's a licensed psychologist, marriage and family therapist, and AASECT certified sex educator with 30 years experience in the field. She's the author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, The Power of the Feminine Way, a blend of current clinical knowledge and ancient wisdom. Dr. Savage is recognized as a leading sex therapist, seminar leader, and speaker, and we'll repeat it later, but her website is goddesstherapy.com, goddesstherapy.com. So Linda, cronehood, the most important time in our lives.
Yeah.
let me toss it over to you.
Yeah, you mentioned the invisibility, and I hear women say that I feel invisible now. And what they're referring to is men don't quickly look at me the way they did when I was, a younger woman. But what's more important about invisibility, and crone, by the way, means crowned one. And so many women tell me they don't like that term because there was a huge PR campaign that went on from the Middle Ages through Renaissance that made crone synonymous with warty, ugly, cackling, people we don't particularly appreciate,
The hag.
Yeah, so, although very, very ancient women can be absolutely beautiful, it's not about physical beauty, it's about this glow within, and we'll talk about that later. So the dilemma we have now in this changing time, this return of the divine feminine, that's huge buzz going on. 2012 is this time, and it's actually been going on for quite some time. This is to shift out of, our Western culture has a very young view of sexuality, of women. We have the big hero and the maiden. And there isn't a lot that's given to the older woman, and let's say menopause somewhere roughly around 52, that's the Native American definition of a grandmother. They had all kinds of ways of looking at what was in fact a crone woman, and you can claim that at any point, somewhere 50 plus. So you're no longer bearing children. Some women are still rearing children at that age, but there's this beginning to look at, who am I, and where is my sense of value? Because, as you mentioned, the maiden is, the sort of discovering woman, and the mother is very nurturing. So what have we got, going on here? Well, it turns out if you look into ancient cultures, the real powerful, if we go way, way, way back, even before Isis and the Egyptian culture, there was always a woman in a tribe called the Hek, at least that's the term in Egyptian, that was the leader, and she was the woman who spoke the words of power. And she was always a crone woman, meaning that she was beyond child rearing. And the fact that women always lived beyond childbearing, assuming they didn't die in childbirth, is a very significant factor. They really were the ones that carried the wisdom. They were the ones that people looked to. They had the knowledge of herbs and so on. Very rich and powerful time in women's lives. And then it went dormant. You know, we went through a long, long period, dark ages for sure, where the value of women was pretty limited. They were either breeders, and literally they were called that, or they were horse. And beyond that, there was no real function unless they happened to be the queen of the reigning king or the mother of the reigning king. So now we're coming into a time where women have the education, they have the experience, they have the richness of life, and they actually are beginning to look at leadership roles, not necessarily going off and being elected, although that is an option, but leading in any way that really captures their passion. And even if there isn't something where they're organizing or taking on a cause, there's this amazing ability for these women. Their psychic abilities have enhanced, and there's a reason for that. But basically, this Chrome period is astoundingly powerful, enriched, glorious in all aspects, including our sexuality. So that's a kind of a synopsis of the crone.
Well, you know, as you were talking, I was writing down like five or six different questions. bing, 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 bing. So let me start by asking you some of these, and we'll just sort of organically go with it. Okay. So now you said that I was going to ask you, well, when are you a crone? More or less after you've reached menopause and you don't have your menses anymore. Is that generally sort of
well,
a guide?
Okay, here's the difficulty. Perimenopause, which is now defined as almost a 10-year period, is actually, from a spiritual point of view, an initiation time. So it's really, I think, a woman's personal choice to decide when she has reached that. We have cronings now, of course, and women choose to have ceremonies. And I know women who have had cronings at 50, then perhaps at 60, and any time in between.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because if you wait, you know, it takes a long time to know that you've had your last period.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true, because sometimes you get these little sneaky visitors that, you know, you thought it was gone, and there it is.
Right.
So now, why does a woman's psychic abilities, why are they enhanced and when they're in their crone?
Yeah, this is there's a number of reasons, but one of the factoids that I loved from Christiane Northrup's book about the wisdom of menopause is that the FSH, which is what they test to decide that you're in menopause, is elevated. It's a follicle stimulating hormone, that's what it stands for, and it remains elevated. And according to Dr. Northrup, it enhanced our sensing ability. So our sense of smell tends to improve, our sort of our just sense of what's going on, our feelers, our intuition, all of that seems to actually increase. And now this isn't necessarily true for everyone, because if you choose not to pay attention, of course, then, you know, you're not paying attention. But for many women, and I was talking to someone today, and they noticed that their sense of smell has improved. That's just one aspect of many that tunes us into our intuitive selves, our sensing selves, which is the truest informational system we have, is our sense. Now, out of that comes a development and a desire and an interest in gathering both our wisdom that comes from experience and this sense of things. And women often begin to tell friends or people that they care about some things that they sense about them. Now, whether that turns into full-blown prophecy is another, you know, question, but almost every woman I know who's going into the menopause years begins to share some of her wisdom, but it's not blah, blah knowledge, you know, from books. It's really her intuitive wisdom.
Now, is it going too far to say that even if in your younger years, when you were a maiden or a mother, you know, you maybe didn't ever develop your psychic abilities, maybe when you're in your crone, you can?
Absolutely. But what's interesting is that women are uniquely set up to be intuitive. They always have this sort of focus within. When you have a period, you're sensing what's going on, your attention goes within. And then when you give birth, when you have a child growing inside you, you again learn to tune in to what's going on. Maybe you think it's only about the body and what's going on with your body, but it's also develops your sensing ability. So we're actually learning. And then, of course, when you have children, you get sort of psychic about your kids. You know, everybody jokes about mom has eyes in the back of her head. Well, that kind of thing is going on for most women. Then if it crosses a boundary where you begin to accept that you've got some ability to see what's going on, to kind of sense what's going on. Many people experience, you know, they think about someone and then they run into them or hear phone calls. I mean, all of that can get developed, and it really is a choice.
Okay. Well, and I wanted to ask you, too, and again, you know, what you said, there was so much potent stuff there. You're talking about the women used to be either breeders or whores.
Mm-hmm.
And what immediately popped into my head was during the time of the Inquisition. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they talk about it was the old women, the old hags.
Yeah.
They were the ones that were often dragged off to be burned at the stake.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, is it going too far, you think, to say that it's because, you know, these were the women that, you know, had life experience. They couldn't, you know, that maybe they were threatening in some way.
Oh, they're very threatening. There's a film made in Canada. It's a series, three film series, and I'm trying to, the Burning Times is the one I'm thinking of. Not only were they threatening because they were the herbalists, people who did not have money for the sort of newly minted doctors who were males, women weren't admitted to medical schools, but they mostly went to these women who were herbalists and had, you know, the ability to heal people. So that was one strike against them, and the doctors really wanted to basically take over the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
The other strike was many of these women outlived their husbands, and so they had property.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see the movie The Burning Times, a lot of it was a big, huge property grab. That was going on in Salem, by the way. There were quite a few women who were accused who also conveniently were widows that they could confiscate their property. So that was another thing. And then, of course, just the general threat that these women had abilities that people sought, you know, to see the future or to, you know, give people information and guidance. And so they were quite a threat. Actually.
Right, right. Instead of putting them on a throne, they got the
stake. I know.
And I'm thinking too back in maybe this is the 1800s or the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, I don't know my time frame that well. You know, this sort of more goes to sexuality and maybe not even necessarily the prone. But you know, we would hear these strange things that, you know, and I'm wondering if this had something to do with the Victorian times, not wanting women to acknowledge their sexuality. But wasn't there some sort of, you know, strange language and things that the medical industry talked about, where women...
hysteria? You're talking about hysteria?
Yes, yes. Was that exactly? I mean, it's kind of off the cuff, but...
I know. There's a really interesting book written about Abraham Lincoln's wife called Mary Lincoln... or it's called Mary, I think, Mary. But it actually catalogs, if you want to understand the mental health issues of that time, she's pretty much a good example. She was very psychic. She was very interested in spiritualism because she'd lost children. And while she was with her husband still, they couldn't do anything about it. But as soon as Lincoln died, her son had her committed, because she was into all these crazy psychic things. And in that story, they talk about other women that were committed to asylums because they were too sexual. They were hysterical. They wanted too much sex with their husbands. I'm not talking about women that are on the streets. So there was a wide variety of why that went on. Some of it was the women were just too feisty and said no and refused to, you know, submit to their husbands and so on. But, yeah, and... they did hysterectomies, and they also committed them. It's a very tragic thing. Fortunately, we're not living in those times now, although there is a subtle kind of repressive energy around, you know, psychics are not supposed to be okay, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, women who do things beyond their, you know, typical roles are sort of frowned upon. So it's still going on, but thank goodness we have justice and laws going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when you think about it, it's really crazy. I mean, I just read recently some, you know, Baptist ministers were talking out against yoga. You know, yoga.
I know, it's
you know, just boggles.
And they still
don't
want women to be ministers. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, so one of my other questions was, you know, and maybe this is, you know, I don't know if there's any basis in fact for this, but it seems like to me, at least just from observation, that as women get older and they're maybe in, you know, their crone or what maybe like Donna Hennis or Ava Park call their queen.
Or a wise woman.
You know, it almost seems like women look at men differently. Do you think that's true? Do we size them up differently? Do we want different relationships than when we were our mate?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what's interesting is that the media wants to grab onto this cougar concept.
I
have a really good friend who calls herself Joan the Sexy Crone. and she's in her 60s. But, you know, women are going to be grappling with this aging issue and body image and so on, but the women who've sort of found themselves and really are okay with who they are also very free to choose to have sexual partners. I mean, let's say that they've lost a husband or have been divorced or whatever. You know, you see a lot of freedom because they're no longer bound by the kind of censure that would happen with a young woman. And their children are grown, you know, so they really can make a choice about the partners that they choose. Sometimes they are younger. But what they're looking for in relationship is more often someone who will treat them with honor. That's one of the more important conditions for good sexual relationships for the women of this age is that they're honored.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly they want to be attractive, but it's a different kind of attractiveness. And a woman who's found herself and is not trying to look like a 25-year-old has an amazing allure because of her wisdom, because of that inner light, that illumination, because she's pursuing her spiritual path or she's pursuing her passion. You know, I mean, there's something very powerfully alluring about these women.
Well, you know, and you have to educate me here because I'm not sure I've figured out this cougar concept.
Mm-hmm.
It feels derogatory to me, but
is it intended
to be derogatory?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, people are fascinated. There's now a TV show about it, and it's always gone on, by the way. If you look back in history, there's many, many unions, including Mary Lincoln, for example, where women were considerably older, you know, 8 or 10 years older and sometimes more. But they grabbed onto it. It's sort of titillating, you know. It's like, ooh, older woman, younger man. It is also the edginess to the word cougar is that there's something very predatory about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because think of the term. A cougar is kind of a predator.
Right,
now,
right.
You know, we might say something similar to older men with younger women, but we don't tend to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we have a name for older men that date younger women?
No. But we call them trophy wives.
Exactly.
Men get away with everything.
Right. So there's a kind of an implication of the old slut concept that goes along with cougar. But what's funny is that many women are claiming it with pride.
Right.
My friend Joan among them, and she writes blogs for More and some places like that, and it's women allowing themselves to be attracted to whoever they choose, and being in their power. They're not being the wimpy little, oh, help me out here, you know,
the
hero maiden model that you know, still many people play out, you know,
right.
The old don't be so smart, the guys won't like you kind of garbage.
Well, and, you know, and those are the kind of men we don't really need, do we?
No. And so what's really cool is that there are a lot of men, and there are also men that tend to respect the divine feminine, by the way, who really love the wisdom of these women and are very, very attracted to them. There are actually websites, and I don't suggest you go to them, but they're called, wait, let me get this right, Cubs.
Cubs.
Cub websites. So the man that attracted the cougars are
called. Oh, that's so funny.
I know. It cracked me up when I first heard that. You've got to be kidding.
Oh, I can't wait to tell my husband that one. Well, you know, I'm thinking about Cougar, and you know who popped into my mind? And I never think about her, never ever in a million years, but she popped into my mind. I don't know, maybe I'm channeling her right now. Mae West. Was she like one of the first Cougars?
Yeah. I mean, she certainly was a woman way ahead of her time and so comfortable with sexuality and so able to kind of, you know, appeal, but also have this little edge, you know, that is that a pickle in your pocket kind of concept. You know, no fear of men's sexuality. Just,
right.
Hey, I know what's going on, and, hey, you know, I can invite you in or not, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, Linda, I have a theory, and I don't know that I've actually ever voiced it. And for all I know, I read it someplace and don't remember, and now I think I thought it up. You know how that is. You know, you never really know. But, you know, I'm thinking about women in their queen or in their crone and how dangerous they could potentially look.
Yes.
And I remember watching once at a fair a woman, a priestess in our community, you know, she was, you know, she's a, you know, a woman with a beautiful, ample body. You know, she could almost be the Venus of Willendorf or something.
Yeah.
You know, big and sexual and ample and powerful. And she was dancing with the snake. And in the moment I saw her, I thought, this is what men were afraid of. This is why they made the goddess disappear. This is why they made us second-class citizens. This is what they are afraid of.
Women in burqas, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
because there's an allure, there's a magnetism to feminine sexuality that is, in a way, it can grab women's men's attention, sorry, so greatly that they can sort of lose focus.
And it's
powerful, and there have been, throughout history, terms like vagina dentata, you know, this fear men had that there were actually teeth inside there. Yeah, I mean, that's a term. You know,
women
were beaten for being wanton. I mean, yeah, there's a tremendous feel because it's a free and fierce kind of sexuality, and it's not bound by, you know, you must submit to your husband the way he wants it, and, you know, and so older women are very clear what they want, and they're also clear that they're not going to be available every time a man is going, oh, come on. They're going to be sexual when they want to be.
Right.
And they're going to be in the way that they choose. And it's a very, what I call, free and fiercely independent sexuality.
Right. Well, and I'm thinking, too, beyond sexuality, I'm thinking that these are the dangerous women that now have the time to make a difference in the world.
Yeah.
They've
yeah.
raised their children, and now they're gonna be the iron-jawed angels.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, they're going to be the ones out there that are going to dedicate the rest of their lives to making the world a better place, kind of
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely, absolutely,
know?
And that comes from a spiritual authority as well as a wisdom and a passion, and yeah, they are really dangerous women. I think that that term came from Jean Bullen, but it's fascinating because now we have the baby boomer women. By and large, more educated than any population before, and often have the means, and sometimes even the support of their husbands. I hope that, you know, they're wonderful, wonderful, like your husband and mine, who are out there saying, "Hey, go for it, girl," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this compassion that they gain through the mother years to go, this isn't right. We need to help these people, or we need to help these children, or animals, or any, you know, kind of, and they've been able to do some amazing things and continue to do so. So we're in a great time to be an older woman.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, these sorts of men that we're describing, I'm wondering, maybe Roy is a cub. I don't know. Maybe he's a cub.
Well, my husband is, too. He's 8 years younger than me.
Well, Roy is older than I am, but he loves this. Oh, well, that's true. So maybe he's not a cub, but he falls into this category of he's not at all intimidated by the dangerous woman. You know,
right.
He likes the idea that she's a partner, that, you know, he can relax a little bit and doesn't always have to take the lead.
Right.
And you know, he's just not intimidated in the least. You know, it's like you said, go for it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just a shame we don't have more men that, I guess, you know, there's something, I mean, I look at my husband sometimes and I think, you know, he's just not intimidated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, he feels this is a wonderful thing. And,
yeah.
you know, maybe these powerful women images, like we were talking about before, the dancer with the snake and the beautiful
mm-hmm.
body, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just maybe makes some men feel less than or vulnerable or something, you think?
Right. When you're raised that you have to be the hero and you have to conquer the world, and then these women are just who they are, it's very confusing. By the way, you and your husband, and I like to believe mine too, are part of what I see as this new archetype emerging of true partnership, of co-equal partnership. Not that you're equal as in alike, but
mm-hmm.
that each of you is encouraging the power each of you has. And it's amazingly synchronistic. I mean, it's the most powerful energy. And not that we don't occasionally fight or have, you know, rough times.
Sure.
But that synergy of a true partnership is much more engaging and powerful and juicy.
Right.
For, I mean, what I'd like to say to any men listening is, you know, hey, just tune in to this kind of energy. You know, this is wonderful stuff.
Try it. You'll like it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and encouraging each other rather than being rivals. And that's, to me, what is sad, because I, as you know, work with couples a lot. And you know, where they're just fighting each other and draining each other's energy, it's tragic.
Yeah.
You know, when you just go, wow, you're great, and I'm great, and we're different, and let's see how we can support each other. It's amazing. And I see this happening much more after the children are at a certain stage, you know, maybe they're in high school or left home. Suddenly the opportunity to really be co-equal partners is emerging in a great way.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is, because, you know, I mean, I run into a lot of different kinds of women, you know, some women who've been, you know, wounded and hurt, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, their whole focus is trying to see how they can rid themselves of male energy, you know.
Right.
And
right.
then you have the guys who want women to, you know, dress in burkas, and I assume part of that it's because they can't control their own
desires. That's right. Don't turn me on, so cover up, you know.
Yeah,
it's
heaven
never
forbid, don't turn me on.
Turn on.
You know, so yeah, so this is I'm so glad you said that. That gives me hope.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you're saying in this time of a woman's life, she also starts to value friendships and community more, too.
Yes. Yes. This is, I'm actually writing a novel for which I'm sorry I do not have a title yet. But it is about this kind of development, the psychic development, the new relationships, all the possibilities. But more than anything, the new frontier of consciousness is community. It is no longer a viable option to go off into the wilderness and, you know, seek enlightenment and you just go off and do your thing by yourself. I mean, people do it, but what's really going on now is community. And it's an exciting frontier because through community is how we not only channel love from the universe, but we make the changes that need to be made, and we support each other and enhance each other's power. And so you see things like the Red Hat Society and, you know, various kinds of sisterhoods and books being written about women empowering each other to get through trials and difficult times. And it's, to me, one of the big themes now, and I don't want to exclude men as part of that community. In fact, I think that we are in some kind of community where we're all saying, yeah, we want this new kind of consciousness. It's the most powerful there is. But what's happening is a way that women are healing their woundedness because of all the repression is through giving each other the encouragement and the value and the validation that had been missing. Really, I don't think it's been till the 20th century, at least, that women began to emerge. And it's only been in the last quarter of the 20th and into the 21st century that we have this concept of divine feminine that's pretty much around the world. You know, I mean, the concept is like emerging out of the darkness.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, I really, you know, the radio show has really showed me how far beyond just our goddess community or pagan community the idea of the sacred feminine is thriving. You know, it's so encouraging, you know.
Yeah.
I have to keep reminding myself of that when I turn on the nightly news.
I know, because there's some male bastions still badly living in horror and fear.
Well, and, you know, and to piggyback on that, do you have any thoughts about why it is some women continue to support that sort of patriarchal paradigm? You know, maybe they call themselves Mama Grizzlies, but they're still, they're the patriarchy. They're not the,
I know.
The divine feminine model.
Right.
Oh, are they just, confused? I mean,
yeah.
Is it, they
don't understand
know?
Why women would put other women down and why they would defend a male concept of the universe and that it's, you know, hierarchy and you've got to follow the rules and this person says and you're wrong and I'm right and, you know, all of that stuff, very dualistic, is so not the feminine. And it puzzles me. I don't understand it. What I believe is that many of these women have taken on the persona of the patriarch because they see the power in it. And the feminine is very wounded in them, but rather than try to reclaim the feminine, they just go, okay, I'm going to go where the power is, and I'm going to be like them.
Right.
It's a kind of a mimicking of, oh, okay, well, that's, you know, I remember as a young woman seeing, you know, I had older brothers, and it's like, how come they get to do stuff I don't? And I kind of determined that I was going to be smarter and better and more successful, and I was. You know, I achieved all this stuff. But I chose ultimately a profession that was really a feminine profession, you know, be a therapist. But, you know, it took quite a bit of awakening and healing the woundedness in my own feminine soul for me to really go, you know, patriarchy is no longer the way. It just isn't. But I am always saddened and hurt and puzzled why there are women out there screaming angry, you know, hate, 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 and bad, 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 and, you know, you guys are wrong. And it's a puzzle, but I do think it's because they've just decided to take on. You know, it's like the abusers, you know, take on, or the people who are abused often take on the role of the abuser. It's one of the things we know in the field with children, you know, as they grow up, they become abusers, and they've been abused. So to me, that's kind of what it's about.
Well, and let me just speak hypothetically here. You know, I had a funny thought as you were talking. Gee, I wonder if it's possible to give Sarah Palin an intervention, you know, an intervention and program her about the sacred feminine. Imagine if she rechanneled that energy. But, you know, but thinking about her, you know, as an example, because, you know, she looms so large, you know, with the divisiveness sometimes, you know, and she's an evangelical, and her church is, you know, they say, I mean, this is their words, not mine, is at war with the Queen of Heaven. They don't even know the divine feminine, you know. So it's almost as if, you know, maybe that's part of it too. They just really don't know this whole stuff we live, you know. They don't even know it exists.
Well, Sarah, to me, feels very masculine, you know, the whole scene of her shooting a moose or whatever she did and all of that, and yet she uses the fact that she's an attractive woman as a kind of a powerful manipulator. So she's a puzzle in that she sounds so goofy in her interviews, kind of like a giggly girl, and then, you know, she's out there stomping with the patriarchs, and they believe that they're now, you know, letting in a woman into their midst. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're taking a woman who's, you know, the old boss. This is what happened in the organizational, you know, when they began to promote women, they would promote the women who were masculine. And that's what Sarah Palin is. And it's sad. You know, she doesn't, you know, people go, yeah, we've got a woman now. I'm like, no, you don't really.
Well, and you know, and maybe it's just a right thing, but, you know, it's like they don't, I think they don't really get the idea. It's not about the genitals. You know, they seem to think it's just about, you know, if you have a vagina, then that's the only qualification. You know, that makes it all okay. Now we have a woman, you know.
Exactly. She's a token woman, too, in my opinion. I don't think that there's any real power in her.
Yeah. Well, and again, I would love for just somebody to give her an intervention, you know, like they do to deprogram Scientologists or whatever, you know.
Let's heal that feminine wound, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were saying a minute ago that you think that, you know, we have this new paradigm emerging, you know, the couples. What did you call it again?
The co-equal partnership.
Well,
and
sacred
partnership is what I like to call it.
The sacred partnership.
Yeah.
And then you just said, too, about the emergence of, you know, of women who are maybe valuing friendship and community more. Do you think that is also sort of a break from this, you know, this idea that, I mean, I don't know, I've been told from women that, you know, there's so much, you know, women's inhumanity to women because women have sort of been programmed by the patriarchy not to trust one another. It's
right,
sort of divide and conquer, and we didn't even realize that's what they're doing to us, you know.
Yep.
So do you think this is kind of a shift away from that as well?
Oh, absolutely, and I think they go hand in hand. I think women who accept and embrace the community of women are also better co-equal partners with men. So they aren't, you know, one or the other. And, you know, finding your power and your validation and then bringing it to the table of a relationship is what needs to happen. We need a divine feminine along with a divine masculine. And, by the way, the earliest archetype of that, which, of course, got suppressed, is the marriage of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, who were sacred partners, truly sacred partners. And he completely included her in the teaching. She was a prophetess. She was a speaker, a healer. She did all of the things co-equally with Jesus. But, of course, that could not last through a patriarchal era. And so, you know, we don't – well, now that information is coming out. And, of course, everybody's upset and they're thinking, no, that's not possible. But, of course, it is absolutely possible. And that archetype of the sacred partnership where there's spiritual leadership and they were certainly social, you know, sort of instigators of change and, you know, in every level. And they were deep sexual partnerships. So all of that, you know, carried forward 2,000 years allows us to begin to have some models for what that might look like at a very high level.
Right. Well, and I'm thinking Isis and Osiris, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Although we don't know the real folks, you know, they became deified before we had any knowledge of who they might have been in real life.
Right, right. Well, you know, you just said something that I just love the phrase. You said, did you say holy instigators?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that term. I think I like that for myself. Priestess instigator.
Right. The whole community was co-equal. The men and women lived together, worked together. They called each other sister and brother. I mean, it was a communal endeavor.
Well, and I'm thinking about it, too, going back to the idea of the dangerous woman who wants to make change in the world. You know, she's instigating. You know, she's stirring that cauldron, you know.
That's right.
You know, she's not satisfied with the status quo. She wants it to be better.
Right,
you know,
right.
So
she's not going to sit in a rocker and knit, you know.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Nothing against knitting. It's wonderful, but she's also going to be doing other things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Now, you said something about the shamanic traditions.
Yeah.
You know, talk a little bit about that, you know, the sort of the rebirth of creativity and, you know, how the shamanic tradition ties into the crone. Is that just, you know, as she's developing her psychic skills, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I am not the world's authority on shamanism, but I am working with a shaman who happens to be male, interestingly enough. So I'm learning how that is informing us, because there's a tremendous interest, certainly in California. A lot of people are studying with shamans, and the term is out there. And, you know, it could be interpreted a lot of ways, but one of the things about shamanism is the animal world was very much a part of how we were informed about nature, and shamanism is definitely an earth-honoring and nature base. But shamanism, from my understanding, and remember, I'm just learning, is the ability to travel through many, many dimensions and the ability to see and understand way beyond the so-called scientific world that we can only see and feel and test. And this is sort of a natural for women. There are many men that are very attracted and active in shamanism as well, but for women it's a natural. You know, you mentioned the right brain, and you know, I think it goes beyond left and right. I think it's dimensions way beyond the things that you can, you know, do a scientific experiment on, and yet they are direct experiences. I've had some of them myself, and it is developing my psychic abilities, but it's tolerating all these different possibilities and not having linear, you know, it's either this or that, black or white, yes or no. And to see the world as sort of this incredible series of dimensions and to travel in them, you know.
Yeah, so, that's pretty exciting.
And come back with good information so you're not gone. You know?
If you can only get those lottery numbers.
I know. Yeah,
and build a temple. Will you give me the lottery numbers if I build a temple? You know, we were just talking about negotiating with our pets, and I'm negotiating with your spirit guides. Give me the numbers, I'll build a temple. Well, we have probably about 5 more minutes, Linda. What haven't we covered that you think might be important?
Well, what I want to say to women who are on the threshold of perimenopause or maybe just pass through it and actually kind of see themselves in menopause is please understand this as an initiation experience in every sense of the word. You are going through experiences. Some of them are tough. There are health issues that women need to, you know, grasp on and find solutions. That's why so many women are interested in alternative health. And there are psychological issues. It's sort of like the descent of Inanna. I mean, actually, I believe menopause is. And that myth, if you're not familiar, well, yeah, I know you're familiar with it, but, you know, she goes into the underworld to find her sister, and she has to give up a lot. And eventually comes back the other side, very powerful woman. First thing she does is kick out her cheating husband. But, you know, menopause is really this time where you have to let go of certain things and find the inner self, what really matters. And you know, when you treat it as this amazing initiation experience that is meant to empower you, it's nothing to be afraid of. As Christiane Northrup said, menopause is not a disease, although our culture wants to make it that way. Mm-hmm. And it's not the end of the world. In fact, there's this postmenopausal zest that Margaret Mead talked about. I mean, she was in the 50s talking about this. And I've discovered it. And it's a zest for life, and it's also an energy. And some of it comes from learning to be careful about diet, be careful about exercise, find out what herbs and supplements are working for you. You know what I mean? You're discovering your own power that way.
It's almost like you're starting another like another phase of your literally starting another phase of your life, and it's not the end.
That's and you know, culture's lopped it off. Okay, menopausal women, you're on the dust heap.
Right.
And that is so not true when you go farther back than patriarchy. These women were just getting their
groove on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what a waste. What a waste when women succumb to that toxic programming. Linda, we have a caller. I'm gonna go in and see if she wants to talk or if she's just listening. So
okay.
Caller, I'm gonna unmute you here, I think. You're from the 972 area code. Did you have a question for Linda?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Christian, yes.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. I have a nursing license examination this morning. I'm kind of nervous. I just want to know, do I pass?
You're asking for the psychic information of whether you passed?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm not a prophetess. I can't do that. Here's what I would suggest, though, is keep your vision on the truth that you did well. And hold that vision and don't let anybody start talking you out of believing in yourself.
I try to, but sometimes it's hard to I know.
So you have fear and anxiety that then, oh, maybe I didn't. And you just need to hold on to this inner self. You really want to be a nurse, is that right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, and hold that because it's meant for you to do.
Yeah, but you know, this is the seventh time I took. And then for the sixth time, a lot of psychics told me, you pass. But you know, later on, I got a failed result.
Right.
So I'm kind of down on myself, you know.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I don't have any insight into the future for you, but I do encourage you to keep your vision strong.
Okay. I'm sorry, I have one more question. I have a dog. Sometimes I try to read him. So do you see possible I can read the reading for my dog, try to understand what he wants? That'd be possible?
You know, you may be thinking about the speaker
previous
that was on before me.
Right. A caller. Our pet psychic was on an hour ago.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm glad you're listening. You can get in touch with her, though, if you're on the Internet by going to telepathictalk.com or email me, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with her. Thank you so much for calling, though.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry. Thank you.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Bye-bye. So, Linda, before we go, we have to sort of make this quick. But
yeah.
If a woman is, you know, not in a community like ours where we all know about this stuff and we live it, sleep it, breathe it,
mm-hmm.
say they're in a red state somewhere, say they're in Kansas, and they relate to what we're talking about and they want to give themselves a crowning, what does that look like? Or where can they go to crown themselves and really just embrace this powerful time of their life?
Wow, it's wonderful. And by the way, they can probably Google Crone Ceremony and find some, but there's an organization called Crone's Council, and you can Google that. And Crone's Council will probably have a lot of good information. I actually did a workshop on how to do a croning ceremony, but it really is gathering your beloved friends and creating a ceremony that's meaningful to you. I do have a outline of the elements to a croning ceremony that you might want to think about, and I'd be happy if somebody emails me to send that outline. So I'm happy to do that. But also, Crone's Council is a great resource, and I think it's C-O-U-N-S-E-L, not I-L. C-I-L, yeah. So it's Council as opposed to Council.
Okay.
Anyway, and it's a time to just honor yourself and to choose the pieces that you want that are meaningful to you. So ultimately, there's nothing, you know, right or wrong about how you choose to do it, but you gather your friends and create a ceremony for yourself. And then it's kind of a saying, I'm crossing a threshold. I'm ready. I'm you know, excited about this.
Well, and you know, all of those sort of crossing the threshold ceremonies, you know, a wonderful thing to actually do is literally like lay a broomstick down
yes.
and cross over
cross it,
and,
it yeah.
and you physically make that step into the new life, you know, into
and
the new awareness.
And then take a cloak or a crown or something as a symbol, you know, that sense of having, you know, put something on that says, hey, here I am. You know?
Yeah. Or, you know, I just got this flash of, you know, give yourself a beautiful ring, you know,
yeah.
so that you can see it every day.
Yeah, that would represent it, absolutely. A talisman. Yeah.
Well, Linda, this has been so much fun. I have so enjoyed you. Thank you so much. It's been juicy, and I really had fun with you tonight. I really appreciate you being on the show.
That's great.
And I want to tell listeners your website
mm-hmm.
again. It's goddesstherapy.com. And please go to Amazon or your local bookstore and look for Linda's book, Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, The Power of the Feminine Way. How long before we have the yet-to-be-named book out there?
Well, I really plan to finish it by sometime in the spring of 2011, because I wanted to come out before 2012.
Okay. I hear
so,
you.
So it's in the works. It's written. It's being rewritten several times because, of course, it needs to be literarily a good book as opposed to a self-help book, which is a lot easier to write.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you. Thank you so very much. I mean, this is such an important subject, and, you know, we really do have to help each other as women, you know, move into this new paradigm because, you know, we have to be those sacred instigators.
Yep, that's right. I love it.
All right. Well, good night, and I look forward to seeing you sometime down the road.
Absolutely. All
right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, listeners, I hope you had as much fun listening to Linda as I had talking to her. And we only have about 5 minutes left on the show, so I am going to make one quick announcement, and then we're going to shift gears into our nightly prayer just to sort of, you know, ground us and help us reconnect, you know, on a, you know, on sort of a different, different level, than, you know, how we've been engaged with our left brains here. The announcement I wanted to make that, it is finally organized. We are going back to Turkey. I'm teaming up with, Turkish scholar, Rashid, Ergener to bring you on the trail of the goddess in Turkey. You know, a diamond in the rough, you know, that is how I usually describe Turkey. It's a melting pot of cultures and spiritualities. I'm taking a group of no more than 20 men and women there. My husband Roy is going to be along. So this isn't just a woman's trip. It's for both genders. That's the way I do my tours. I don't do just women's trips, and because I'm really a firm believer in the balancing the energies. You know, we'll be doing fun things like Turkish baths. We'll experience the whirling dervishes. We'll visit sacred sites of Isis, Kabeli, Magda Mater, Kubaba, Aphrodite, Mary, Artemis, Hecates, or Hecate's only standing temple. You know, we'll do ritual in locales where few tourists tread. So please go to my website, KarenTate.com, and I think by now my webmistress has put a link there. If not, email me. I'll send you the link because the itinerary and details now have, you know, have a website and all the pieces are together. So, what I'd like to do to close the show tonight is just offer some affirmations. The peace of Goddess is now expressing in me. Divinely guided, I move forward with confidence. I claim my innate health and wholeness and sexuality. I live in an abundant universe created by Goddess. I see peace, I speak peace. I see fairness, diversity, tolerance, and truth. I live from this peaceful heart. Well, listeners, that is the end of the show tonight. For the last couple minutes, I am going to let you enjoy the music of Abigail Spinner, and this is from her cut, Arms of the Mother.
Eva, Mama Paja, Deya, Mahama, Amara, Amaduta, come to us, carry us, Ama, Aruruma, Nama, Kamala, Nima, Pachama.